This is The Root Cellar on Pioneer 90.1, where regional history and family folklore come together with your hosts, Jim and Jan Stranley.
It is good to be back in the area once again and give our listeners another rendition of The Root Cellar. This episode will be dedicated to the men and women who worked to keep the national park system alive and well. Our country was on the right track when it decided to preserve and protect portions of America for our citizens to enjoy forever. These areas would have lost their natural beauty and resources if logging companies, mining companies, and resorts would not have been restrained from developing the area. Ken Burns, with his epic portrayal of our national park system on public television, recently gave everyone a good background on how the national park system came about, how portions of our country became enshrined, and how our government needed to supervise and develop the park system for the enjoyment of our citizens. It was a huge task, but America was ready and willing to do it. I just returned from visiting a national park in West Texas called Big Bend National Park. It is the least visited national park in the country. It is also one of the most beautiful parks in the country. It is actually three parks in one, with mountains of all shapes and sizes, a desert of considerable size full of wildlife and natural beauty, and a river that runs through it. Of course, that river is the Rio Grande River, separating the countries of the United States with Mexico. My son, grandson, and I decided to explore this magnificent park as a three-generation trip. It would be an adventure none of us had ever done before. The highlight of the trip was canoeing down the Rio Grande for 3 days, camping out, and sleeping on the ground for 3 nights. We stayed one night at the Park Lodge, which was also a wonderful experience. It will be a trip I will never forget. Noticing how well the park was maintained by the National Park Service, I wondered if Minnesota had any national parks. Of course they do. It is Voyageurs National Park near the Canadian border. Nearly 200 years ago, voyageurs paddled birch bark canoes full of animal pelts and trade goods through this area. Today, people are allowed to explore the park by houseboat, motorboat, canoe, and kayak. Whereas Big Bend was a mountain and desert-based park, Voyageurs is a water-based park where you must leave your car and take to the water to fully experience the lakes, islands, and shorelines of the park. When we explored the park in Texas, we were told of camping restrictions, water requirements, and garbage disposal. It would be the same at Voyageurs. Without due care, while exploring the park, it would not take long before it would become unsightly. At Voyageurs National Park, the interconnected waterways provide recreational boaters with an unparalleled opportunity to explore the forested lake country. My son and I did a trip out of Ely to fish the lakes near there some years ago. You know, you could go on forever in that area. One has to be sure to take a compass and maps, or getting lost in that wilderness could happen very easily. There are also some restrictions one has to follow as well. It took many years before this northeast Minnesota area became a national park in 1975. I remember hearing about public meetings back in the 60s at Ely concerning the national park status. People knew restrictions would be put in place once the area was dedicated to a national park. Guides, resorts, and private companies were opposed to the idea. One can credit many people for moving in the direction of conservation, including Ernest Oberholzer, who dedicated his life to this concept. Not only water covers much of the park, but forests also stretch over the land portion. It has some of the most beautiful scenery in the country. It is breathtaking in the summer, but it is very magnificent in the winter as well. The National Park Service has other duties in Minnesota. They are responsible for the Grand Portage or Grand Portage National Monument, a restored fort along the north shore of Minnesota near the Canadian border. It is a place where voyageurs would meet from the interior of Minnesota and Canada to send their furs back to the east and eventually, for some, all the way to Europe. This subject has been on our Root Cellar program before. Another responsibility of the National Park Service is the Pipestone National Monument in southeast Minnesota. It is a place where early natives would quarry the clay and materials to make pipes and other implements. Since 1937, the National Park Service has operated this monument and kept it open to visitors. Only American Indians who have received a permit can quarry the valuable natural resource. Pipestone National Monument will be the subject of another Root Cellar program in the future. The National Park Service is dedicated to these types of areas that need preservation. Otherwise, without this protection and limitations, the area would be left to wither and die or be desecrated beyond recognition. Our national parks and monuments once were under the direction of the Department of the Interior. But in 1916, since the work was becoming more extensive, a separate department was formed, the National Park Service. The director of the National Park Service must be confirmed by the Senate. The men and women who serve in this department are dedicated to the preservation of the natural resources of America. Now, here is Jan with an interesting story about a state park nearby.
Well, a state park in our neck of the woods? Yes, there's actually more than one, but the one I'm going to talk about today is Hayes Lake State Park, a park located northeast of here. It's on 2,950 acres. Later, they will refer to it as being 3,000 acres. And they have annual visits of 28,047 people, roughly. And so that's nothing to sneeze at. They are open from May 7th through September 5th. And I take it that's probably, no, that would be before Memorial Day through somewhere around Labor Day. Anyway, some of this I'm taking from Irene Olson's reporting in her little radio show for the Roseau Historical Society. The story of Hayes Lake State Park was written for the Roseau County Centennial of 1995 by Dan Fisher, the park ranger at that time. Albert F. Hayes looked to the future and dreamed of an area that would be set aside for water recreation in Roseau County. Early history tells that the desirability of a state park in this area of southeastern Roseau County was first suggested by a 1938 long-range park plan written by the Minnesota Division of State Parks and the National Park Service. Albert Hayes and the district forester, Ralph Thompson, suggested that the present site in Beltrami Island State Forest would be a good location to impound the North Fork of the Roseau River to form an artificial lake for recreational use. A study was done in 1965, and using Hayes's idea, the Roseau Sportsman's Club, spearheaded by Cap Nelson and Meredith Haslerud, helped 3,000 acres within the 350,000 acres of the Beltrami Island Forest become a new park. All of this became possible when the state legislature appropriated $300,000 in 1969 and Hayes Lake State Park Association was created. Back to the original history, when glacial Lake Agassiz receded from large areas of northwestern Minnesota approximately 10,000 years ago, it left behind a flat landscape. The only prominent interruptions of this are the beach ridges and river valleys formed as the ancient lake retreated. the glacial lake bottom landscape within the area of Hayes Lake State Park was probably exposed to the erosive forces of wind and water 9 to 11,000 years ago, and several thousand years earlier than areas to the northwest. As a result, from scenic points along the park's trails, visitors can see how the action of the water has cut, gouged, and eroded a steep, U-shaped, small floodplain valley. And you know, if you have driven in that area, that there is evidence of the beaches and the sandbars, which are probably what caused Bemis Hill to be the way it is, and for that road area and the soil to be so sandy. In the early 1900s, the first homestead was established in what is now the west portion of the park area. Family graves of this first homesteader, L.V. Hendershot, and by the way, that is my cousin's grandfather on the other side of her family. The graves can be seen along the trail starting to the northwest of the dam. Farther down the trail, past the grave sites, are the remains of the original farmstead. Some of the most scenic views of the river and forest can be seen along this trail and near that homestead site. Hayes Lake officially became a state park in 1967. Since the need for water-based recreation sites was a priority for the area, one of the first things to be developed for the park was the creation of a lake formed by damming the Roseau River. Both the lake and the park were named in honor of A.F. Hayes, an early settler of the land now included in the park, and an advocate of the creation of the lake. The park was dedicated in 1973 and has continued to draw visitors who are attracted by the swimming and fishing opportunities offered by Hayes Lake, and also the camping in the campgrounds accompanying it. Black bears are residents of the northern forest and are seen occasionally in the park. Moose, fisher, otter, bobcat, pine marten, lynx, and timber wolf can be seen in and around the park. More common wildlife include deer, fox, raccoon, porcupine, beaver, mink, skunk, and along the shoreline, loons, herons, grebes, and other water birds can be observed. There are a total of 2.5 miles of self-guided trails that are marked going through the campground and to the main picnic area. There are 13 miles of hiking trails, 5 miles of mountain bike trails, a boardwalk around a loop of the campground, 7 miles of horseback riding trails, 9 miles of cross-country ski trails, and 6 miles of snowmobile trails. And one can snowshoe anywhere except on the groomed trails. Some days it's just you, loons, and moose. And while you traverse around Hayes Lake, fed by the north branch of the Roseau River, the lake supports crappie, sunfish, largemouth bass, and northern. Bird watchers have spotted over 200 species in or near the park. The summer is perfect to look for orchids and blueberries. You can pick the blueberries, but not the flowers. Visitors also enjoy swimming and canoeing in the lake, along with camping. As of July 1, 2009, an angling license for fishing is no longer required in Hayes Lake State Park, with the exception of ice fishing. Motor use on Hayes Lake is restricted to electric motors only. The Friends of Hayes Lake State Park are actively seeking new members. Membership is open to individuals and organizations interested in supporting Hayes Lake State Park through park improvement projects and volunteer activities. Call the park for membership information. Several of the events that are coming up this summer are starting already on the 1st of May, which is named Green Touch Day. It's a day for camp cleanup, an opportunity to help improve the park, plant trees, clear trails and campsites, rake, and assist with other cleanup projects. This event is sponsored by the Roseau Electric Cooperative, and they also provide refreshments. The 15th of May is Breakfast with the Birds. It's an event with an opportunity to search various habitats to see which birds have returned for the season. On the 23rd of May is Geocaching 101. Discover the fascinating challenge of geocaching and how you can use it to combine the refreshment of the outdoors, the excitement of a treasure hunt, and the technology of a global positioning system which explore Minnesota State Park's wildlife and hidden treasures. It's a hands-on class with a basic instruction to using a GPS unit. Wow, doesn't that sound like fun? On the 12th of June is Open House, Outdoor Recreation Day, and free park admission. Come and picnic with the Friends of Hayes Lake at the beach area. Doesn't that all sound like fun? Why don't you plan a day or even a weekend at Hayes Lake State Park this summer? That's all for today. Bye.
The Root Cellar with Jim and Jan Stranley is a production of Pioneer 90.1. You can hear it Monday nights at 6:30 on the Kathy Erickson Show, and Wednesday mornings with Ben at 7:30 a.m.